Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with a story that doesn't really surprise us anymore because she does this all the time. And it's Hillary Clinton. She was involved in a Democratic presidential debate that was, of course, held on Saturday night. So as few Americans as possible tuned in. I think it was a total of 8 million, which is just a fraction of how many tuned in for the Republican debate. And Hillary Clinton got a lot of attention for her outfit, for the fact that she came back from a break late, and all sorts of other things. But the more time has gone on, she's gotten attention for this comment about how she believes Donald Trump's comments as it relates to ISIS and Muslim immigration and other issues actually helps to strengthen ISIS.
And we also need to make sure that the really discriminatory messages that Trump is sending around the world don't fall on receptive ears. He is becoming ISIS's best recruiter. They are going to people, showing videos of Donald Trump insulting Islam and Muslims in order to recruit more radical jihadists.
Only problem is no one can actually find any evidence of that. That doesn't mean videos might not be in the works, but she made a statement that is patently not true, which is even made even more interesting, Jim, by the fact that there is an ISIS video that features her husband and refers to him as a fornicator, which I'm sure she's very fond of being made public again. But for a woman who lies a lot to get out of trouble, she has this weird habit of lying when it doesn't really even matter.
I just have this feeling written down in her hand as sort of a panic move is blame the video. And why is this the good martini? Greg, I actually think this is going to come back and hurt her. One being that it's so out there that it required, you know, all the fact checkers, you know, folks on CNN and factcheck.com, even Vox had to say, you know, there really isn't any ISIS video touting Donald Trump's arguments. And in a way, I made my opening comment about her blaming the video. I mean, inherent in her statement is that if you're an American and you say something that offends Muslims, then you're helping ISIS recruit. Well, you know, as Ala Pundit put in Hot Air yesterday, Greg, what should we do about gay marriage? We stand for lots of stuff that ISIS doesn't like. The idea that we say, hey, you know what? Women should have the same rights as men and everybody should be free to worship whoever the heck they want or nobody if they want. That offends ISIS too. ISIS is going to use that to recruit because that to them is an example of how we're the secular, godless West and we're terrible and all that stuff. So her point is really kind of nonsensical other than to draw together two things that her audience in front of her, the Democratic base, doesn't like. They really don't like Donald Trump and they kind of don't like ISIS. And so she's saying that the thing that they really hate is what's motivating the thing that they also kind of sort of hate. And it's this, I think it's utterly outlandish. And the point I was trying to make today in the Morning Jolt is that she's running on her experience. She's running on her knowledge, on her alleged understanding of how the world works. Now, if you run around saying Donald Trump is what motivates ISIS, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And so I think she's going to get a lot of questions about this. And at this point, I am sure they're desperately hoping ISIS makes a video so that they can, you know, say, aha, see, you know, Donald Trump did show up. By the way, Bill Clinton shows up in ISIS videos. Barack Obama, John Kerry, Joe Biden, they all show up in there. We really shouldn't be judging our American politicians based on who shows up in an ISIS video. And the other thing is this is a philosophy that kind of says it's the ultimate. If you're doing exactly what ISIS wants, remember, you know, if we bomb Syria more, it's exactly what ISIS wants. If we keep Muslim refugees out, it's exactly what ISIS wants. ISIS wants to kill us, right? By continuing to live, we're doing exactly what ISIS doesn't want us to do. So it's a nonsensical statement from her that she's going to get thrown back at her a lot, and it fits into the claim about Benghazi being a YouTube and the Tuzla Dash, that she was dodging sniper fire in the Balkans and all that stuff. For all of her alleged experience, she seems to have walked away from it with an extraordinarily politically correct view on these things. And ultimately, you know, if you run around insisting things that aren't true, why should anyone think you're going to be an effective leader in a fight against groups that want to kill us?
Excellent point. And just two thoughts that came to my mind when reacting to this is, number one, there's not a shortage of controversial Trump material. There's a lot of things she could point to that a lot of people of a lot of different stripes would probably agree with her with, depending on how she phrased it. But to have to make stuff up really means you're missing a plenty of material there. Jumping off of your point about Benghazi, Andrea Tanteros over at Fox with a brutal tweet today. If Hillary is willing to look families of dead Americans in the eyes and lie about how they died, there's no lie she won't tell.
Totally correct and accurate. And again, like, you know, I guess the other thing is, let's assume that she herself knows it, that there is no ISIS tape, mentioning Donald Trump. But let's say she decided this was a useful line in the debate. The problem here, Greg, is that now she's taking the public discussion of ISIS from an accurate position to a less accurate position. She ultimately is misleading the public on what drives this group and what it's about. And I, you know, you put in the context also of, you know, Islam has nothing to do with terrorism and things like that. You know, that ultimately she doesn't want us seeing things clearly. And I think that's specifically bad leadership. That is actually taking a bad situation and making it worse.
Speaking of bad leadership, let's move over to her successor at the State Department, John Kerry. As you may know, one of the reasons that a lot of Republicans ended up voting for the extraordinarily questionable omnibus bill last week is that there were a number of provisions in there for the military, and one about strengthening the visa waiver program, reducing the number of countries from which people could come to the United States without a visa. And that includes just even being to certain countries within the past year. And Iran, the world's number one sponsor of terrorism, naturally was included in that list. But turning to Fox News now, top Tehran officials, however, complain the changes violate the terms of the nuclear deal, which says the U.S. and other world powers will refrain from any policy intended to adversely affect normalization of trade and economic relations with Iran. Kerry responded to these concerns in a message to his Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, and suggested the administration could simply bypass the rules for Iran. Jim, you should probably do this in your Kerry voice, but quote, I am also confident that the recent changes in visa requirements passed in Congress, which the administration has the authority to waive, will not in any way prevent us from meeting our commitments and that we will implement them so as not to interfere with legitimate business interests of Iran. How hard can this facepalm hit us, Jim?
Greg, let me simplify a very complicated deal so that you can understand it. Basically, the rules don't apply to Iran. Once you understand that, everything else kind of falls into sense. And in exchange for that, we get a very fancy ceremony in Geneva where I just bought a condo because I spend so much time there. It's terrific. The lake looks great. And the photo op is going to be fabulous. So, yeah, you know, they'll keep sponsoring terrorism and send terrorists into the country and nuclear weapons and all that stuff. But otherwise, we get a really fantastic photo op. And I tell you, I think next year that Nobel has my name on it. It's a lot more fun to answer these questions as Kerry than as myself, by the way.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised. After the James Taylor
Yeah, that's incident, a good point. It's really going to – we're probably like a decade from now, you know, in the – you know, 2 decades from now as we're either fighting to retake Paris or in some other – you know, wherever we're – we'll get back and say, man, really, James Taylor? Really? That was the plan? Yeah. So, anyway, there you go. Hey, what's our crazy martini today, Greg? Since that wasn't crazy enough.
We might have two crazies in actuality today. Let's move on to the crazy martini now and on to the ongoing feud between Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz about what Ted Cruz really wanted to accomplish during the 2013 debate over immigration. Obviously, Marco Rubio is one of the four Republicans who is part of the Gang of Eight, and that bill called for instant legalization and a pathway to citizenship. Cruz, of course, offered an amendment blocking anyone here illegally from ever obtaining citizenship, but he did prescribe a path to legalization. He now says that was a poison pill amendment, and he was never really in favor of that and has no intention of being supportive of that if he's ever president. And so there's a lot of back and forth on this. Jeff Sessions, who's largely considered one of the strongest immigration hawks in the Senate, speaking out recently in defense of Cruz, and here's what he had to say.
As they met, they had a scheme, a plan. And the plan was that they would vote down every amendment, no matter what the amendment was. And they wanted to do that because they said they had achieved, through these secret meetings, a delicate balance between enforcement, and they had the perfect bill, and they couldn't alter it in any way. And every amendment that came up in the Senate Judiciary Committee was voted down. And by the time it got to the House, it was beginning to sink significantly, and the House blocked it and stopped it. It was that close to being passed. And I would say this. I think I can say this with integrity and a good judgment. I believe without the vigorous opposition of Ted Cruz, this bill likely would have passed.
So there's Jeff Sessions of Alabama. Two things here that still scratch the head, Jim, on from Cruz's perspective. Number one, the fact that he so passionately argued for legalization and saying that he wanted the bill to pass. If it's a poison pill, there's a defense there, but it still makes it awkward. And secondly, he's constantly saying he led the fight to stop it, but it passed the Senate. It did die in the House, as Sessions pointed out, but it passed and passed fairly easily in the Senate. So muddy waters definitely on both sides of this debate, but a couple of head scratchers there for sure.
Yeah, and obviously this has been a very big debate over the past week. So I'll go slowly and kind of go through point by point. One is, it is more than defensible to say, it is accurate to say, Ted Cruz was always one step notch to the more restrictionist side than Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio put this out there to muddy the waters, and it appears he has largely succeeded in doing this. But at the time, Marco Rubio supported something, a path to citizenship that most people saw amounted to amnesty. And at the time, the Cruz alternative was a path to legalization, but not citizenship, and the people would not be able to vote. Fast forward a couple of years, and now Marco Rubio says he does not support a path to citizenship. He supports a path to eventual legalization after border security, after E-Verify, after all of these other steps are designed to taken to weed out the bad ones, deport the bad ones, fines, all that kind of stuff. The problem with Ted Cruz's position, in that last debate, he said he had never supported legalization, not just path to citizenship. And as you point out, in this amendment, he's saying we're going to create a path to legalization. Now, Cruz says that the entire time, his whole secret motive was to put in this poison pill and to prove that Democrats were the real extremists, that they weren't willing to settle to anything less than full citizenship for the 11 million illegal immigrants in this country. I think he did that. I think it's a perfectly reasonable point to make. The problem is, if you run around saying, I want to see a reasonable compromise, I want to see the bill pass, and you introduce an amendment specifically setting up a path to legalization, you can't say, oh, I always opposed legalization. You know, basically the gist is, and Cruz fans don't like this the least bit, but I see his argument as saying, Greg, I was deep undercover as a bill supporter the entire time. And I don't think that works. If you run around saying you want the bill, you think this is a reasonable bipartisan compromise that Republicans and Democrats can both agree on, people aren't going to believe that you always opposed the bill and wanted to see it fail. And everybody says, well, Jim, when you introduce a poison pill, you don't say that it's a poison pill. Okay, fine. But if you run around saying these things, you can't get angry at other people for believing you. I don't think that Ted Cruz is lying on that debate stage. I think in his mind, he believes he always opposed a path to legalization. The problem is, this means he was lying back in 2013. And he's telling us he was lying back in 2013. And that's fine, except the problem is when you tell us you were lying back in 2013, people start to wonder if you're lying about what you think now. So again, what about Rubio? Okay, fine. Rubio is still one step further to the legalization scale. To me, Cruz on this is like Carson on Manitech. You go up on a debate stage, you say something that's just flat out not true. I don't see why we as Republicans should be okay with that.
No, it needs to be called out. And as you point out, there's a couple of ways this definitely works against Rubio as well, because he voted against this Cruz amendment. Perhaps he knew it was a poison pill. Perhaps it was, as Sessions said, that they were just going to reject all amendments because of the delicate balance that they had there. But ultimately, he was in favor of citizenship at the time and not just legalization. And secondly, the longer this issue is in the eye, even though Cruz will be taking some heat on it, this is the one issue that Marco Rubio is best known for, even though he's got much better ideas on a lot of other issues. But the longer this issue lingers out there for him, I'm not sure over time that that's a good thing for him at all. Maybe our bad was crazier than our crazy, but the crazy was pretty crazy too. But John Kerry's just in a league by himself, I guess. Jim, on that note, this ends the last daily episode of the Three Martini Lunch for the year. But that does not end Three Martini Lunches, because tomorrow begins our special six-part edition of the Political year-end awards. Six different installments leading all the way up to New Year's Eve, so you can ring in 2016 appropriately. Probably appropriately depressed after some of these awards that we're going to be handing out. But ultimately, the best, the worst, the craziest, all along the way. It all begins tomorrow, and looking forward to doing that with you.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. The year-end awards begin Wednesday on the 3 Martini Lunch.